Why exactly did you want to make a film about Tuaregs living in Italy and living all these things? Why did you want to make a film about this?
I wanted to talk about the Tuaregs for many reasons, because I always had the you know, the Tuareg are kind of a symbolical word for freedom in Western culture, because of the literature of the 19th century. French, English literature depicted them like, you know, the poetic blue man of the desert, which helped the people of the age to think that there was still a savage and free world somewhere. In a way, I wanted to, the fact that they were Tuareg helped me in finding the money to make the film. If they were Bambara, a very, you know, respectable nomadic culture, just at the village nearby, nobody would care about that. The fact that they were Tuareg helped me in making the thing visible, because everybody knows who are the Tuareg. You know, so this was one of the issues. Then they became my friends. I've been a traveler for all my life, and so when I found them that they are serious travelers, I've been there with, I made a caravan with them. You know what a caravan is? I
mean, yes.
So just, but you really know, I mean, they live from a village like Abardek, the place where they are, and they moved to the middle of Sahara Desert to the mine, to the salt mines of Bilma, and it takes about 3 to 4 weeks walking with the camels. They walk because the camels are burdened, they have their own burden. Then they take the salt there. They go to the extreme southern part of Niger, which takes a month, go across the border to Nigeria, and then they met the Hausa people. They exchange this salt with millet. Then another 4 weeks of walk, and they come back to the village with this millet, where eventually the woman starts to transform into food. You know, I mean, people say that there is a line at the supermarket, you know, they are wasting time.
Yeah. Okay. How were the conditions for the film, the shoot? How was the camera team? How long did it take to finish the film?
Oh, okay, the camera team is me. So I did everything, even the black and white sequence, which looks like an old time footage, I did it personally with the 16mm camera. So I did all the photography of the film for many reasons. First of which is the fact that if I decide to invest my time and my energy in something, it's costly in terms that I need to get money in order to live, but I can decide what to do. If I have a crew of 4 people, I have to pay them. And that's one of the reasons. Another reason is that if you jump inside the intimacy of a family like I did, and you are with some other people, you know, recording audio, putting lights, I mean, believe me, you destroy everything. I was there because I was their friend. I was sleeping with them in the same room. We did the travel across Africa with a motorcycle. I don't know if you noticed that the sequence in Africa is filmed from a motorcycle. So we did all the trip with a motorcycle. I was driving one and they were driving the other. You know, you cannot force a crew, a professional crew, to do something like that. You need 2 cars, insurance, and it's going to cost you tons of money. Not only, but they were playing with me. They didn't understand that I was doing a film. I mean, they knew I was doing a film. I mean, no, they're not stupid, but they had not the feeling that I was, you know, showing it, you know, in 17 countries, like it's happening right now, you know. And in terms of budget, if you have to value the time and the energy that you spend on a project like that, money is never enough. I moved step by step. I have my own equipment. That's why I'm a filmmaker. You know, I have an editing station, so I have the possibility of doing many things without an extra industrial cost. Mm-hmm. I know one of the most important directors in the world, which is Werner Herzog, did some documentary films practically with no money, and he's selling his films on his website, you know, and his name is Werner Herzog, you know what I mean? Still, because documentary is difficult. I mean, Grizzly Man is it's a masterpiece, you should see it. Fox of War, Academy Award winning documentary, is sold by the author on his website. So it's very difficult to get real money out of documentaries, going back to the budget issue. I don't know, it would be very difficult to explain, but if you go to a television channel and you ask them money, with a project, they give you more money if the project is at the beginning. The so-called commissioning editor, who's the people who buys it, if you go to ZDF and say, well, I have this project about, that's exactly what I did with this film, I've been to different broadcasters. They want to change the project, basically. Yeah. So the earlier they go in, more that they are able to invest in the project. If you want to do your own film and then sell it, they give you much less money, but you got the freedom to do what you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you have to, you know, yeah. It's very, very, very difficult. Okay. The bigger the film, the less the freedom.
The actors in the films, how did you find the actors?
Ah, okay, that's something. I always joke about that. I don't know about the film, but the casting is terrific. I mean, they are great. They appeared to be the characters. I mean, I didn't know at the beginning. I started with the entire community, interviewing the, you know, the adult people when they were alone, when the family started to arrive. Then I fall in love with the kids, and it was some kind of a reciprocal attitude as well, because we were doing together the kind of stuff that their parents don't let them do. You know, video games, going around with the car, loud music, you know, and they're very... So we help them in getting, you know, some of the fun that people of their age has in our culture, and they usually are... It's forbidden for them. So it was an exchange. I helped them in knowing something about our culture, and they helped me knowing something about their culture, you know. So it's... Yeah, I don't know, it's difficult to say. I can tell you that I have all this stuff I was saying before, that I have more than 300 hours of footage, and I had to trash almost everything to give them the importance they deserved, because I understood, you know, on the way, as Alfred Hitchcock used to say, that in cinema, the director is God. In documentary, God is the director. It's a long list of things that I never expected that happened during the film.
And this is something that was surprising for us. In the documentary, you can't hear a commentator. Why did you decide to do without?
Well, I've been, you know, earning my money and doing a decent job for 15 years without putting a voiceover in any of the documentary that I made, which means that it's possible to do that. I hate the voiceover. You know, it's the deus ex machina. You know, it's like when the boys are in the supermarket and the small one says, well, who's speaking, and the other one says, they tell you what to buy. Mm-hmm. You know, the voiceover tells you what you think. I don't like it. I mean, I just don't like it. So it's another problem. Voiceover is more sellable. It's easier for commissioning editor, because TV people very often think that the audience is stupid. So you have to tell them what you think. But when I walk around the street, I find people much less stupid than what the television... You know, professionals seem to think from the program that they make.
We also liked it. Yeah.
No, I see it. I'm very glad of it.
Was it planned or a coincidence that the main character likes to shoot films with his camera?
With my camera.
Yeah.
It's not his camera. No. It's a key issue, though, because it's the camera that I used for my first documentary. I didn't give him a toy. I gave him a professional camera, which is the camera I used for the first documentary. A feature-length documentary that I have made, which was back in 2000. Now, we decided to do that. The boy asked me, because he wanted to be a journalist, as I told you before, and to punish him of this idea, I gave him the opportunity of becoming really a journalist. So let's say that we moved in this direction after a while. I thought it could have been a very beautiful idea to have his view of Italian culture, you know.
So, do you still have contact with the family?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I meet them. Unfortunately, they are not living very near, so I meet them on a monthly basis, more or less. But there's also the film between us. I don't know how to explain, but the film is between us now. We were only friends before. We were sharing things and hoping that things could happen. Now we have the film, which is between us, because there is a French poet and also director, Jean Cocteau, used to say that cinema is death at work on actors. I mean, I cut their story in two parts, before and after my film. The part before is history will last forever. The part after, they don't know what's going to happen, you know. It's kind of weird, especially when you are so young. I've been watching the film with Alcasso sitting in the first row with his brother and looking at him in the city where they live. You know, and he was looking at this naked, savage boy in the desert without shoes, with all his, you know, classroom around him. He was extremely ashamed of it, in a way.
Now I've got another question for the little brother.
Al-Qassum.
Al-Qassum, right. Why did the father wanted to take him to Italy? The father himself said that in Italy he isn't a free man anymore. Why did he want to take his last child from Africa?
Well, first of all, the father said that he's not a free man, answering the question of Sidi, because he didn't know so clearly before we made this documentary. Also, the title, One Way, was kind of weird for him. He told me, well, Fabio, why you call it One Way? We go back, don't we? Because he thought there was a way back. If there was a way back, he could have left the small one there. When he realized that there was no way back, he decided to move also the last one. He actually tried very hard to move all the family together, but he had no money enough. The apartment was not big enough. So he had to change work to earn more money, to have a bigger apartment, and then to fill papers and papers. It took 5 years because there is no Italian embassy in Niger. So they had to go to Côte d'Ivoire. Then there was a war in Côte d'Ivoire, so they had to go to Accra. And eventually they had to make a DNA test. The small boy had to walk about 700 miles, practically walking, to go to Accra to get this DNA test, while the father came to Rome to make the DNA test to prove that they were son and father. And after that, and took another 3 years. And if you want to know why, I mean, because European countries, and Italy in particular, but that's generic, I mean, the United States does the same with the Mexican people. They just want people, young people from 18 to 35, good workers. If they don't want families, because family are a social cost. If you bring your wife and your kids, it's not a bargain anymore. I mean, you work in the country and some money, but you cost very much, especially because they have 5 kids, you know, very often 9 kids.
And to come back to your quotations from the Quran, why did you choose these verses and why from the Quran?
I was trying to understand a little bit more about the Quran, because I thought it was a very powerful book and widely misunderstood, especially in the Western civilization, but not only. So very often the horrible thing that you see in so-called Islamic governments belongs to the craziness of power, not the fact of the religion. So I wanted to say a word, even if it's, you know, just one word, a drop in the sea, but about the fact that Quran is not a book of hate and killing, you know. It's a book full of very clever and deep intuitions about life, and is a point of conjecture of most important monotheistic religions, including, you know, Jewish and Christian, and it should be considered like it is. I mean, you probably know that they saved the ancient culture of Greek through the ages in which the Catholic Church tried to destroy it across the Middle Age up to us. I mean, mathematics, you know, and then few things. Just to be honest, I think that the relationship between the two so divided now cultural entities of Islamic cultures and Western cultures could be a, I mean, it's a necessity at this point.
Yeah.
Something's gonna happen, I don't know exactly what, but you'll see it.
In the film there is no scene that shows the civil war in Niger. Everything seems colorful and happy. Why is this?
Because it's a very beautiful country, and I also wanted to show how beautiful Africa could be, because we always watch African scene, like, you know, there are these insects walking around the faces of babies, you know, extremely poor and degraded situations, and not everything is like that in Africa. And so I wanted to stress how cold and gray was Western world, and how hot and beautiful was Africa. I mean, for once, because I think that it is also like that. Mm-hmm. Of course, they have any possible kind of problem, from famine to flotation. I mean, anything you name it is there. But still, it's a very beautiful country. So I didn't want to stress once again the fact that they were poor and they had problems. And talking about the civil war, you know, there was a civil war between the Tuareg and the government. You get easily killed in this kind of situation if you go around and you are the only white thing moving around with the camera. Very, very easily. So, I mean, it's better if you go to the village pretending to be, you know, with the tagelmust on your head, driving a motorcycle. And when you're safe in the house of your friends, you do the filming. But if you film, you know, soldiers, it could be a serious problem.
And why did you use black-white scenes?
That's also, yeah, I've been a black and white photographer for many years. I love black and white. I wanted to give the sense of the texture of the material in this immaterial age of digital, you know. I love the idea that some of this film was shot on a completely different texture, and I did develop personally the film in a bakelite tank of Russian production, you know, it's very artisanal. You play with it and you look at it, it's just that's a part of the story. And then I thought that it might be a dream sequence. I was thinking very much about what they have been dreaming in their travel. The original title of the script was One Way a Tuareg Dream, because I've been recording and asking them about their dreams. And so I wanted to show the dreams in black and white, and, you know, the testimonial in color, to stress again the difference between these two worlds. But then I ended up in another way, because I fall in love with the kids, like I said before. And the last thing is, it's an homage to this director, Jean Rouge, as a French director, was very influential in my, and not only my, but some, and he died in 2004 in Niger. And so the footage looks pretty much like the footage of the 50s. I mean, could be very, very easily misunderstood for an archive footage. And so I wanted to, it's our memory of Africa. You know what I mean? It's what we remember about old times in Africa. We were not there, so we remember old black and white films of anthropologists of the 50s.
Now, I wanted to ask why the movie is ending this way. You see the camels and the caravan, and then it's over. Why did you make it like this?
What do you think?
Maybe to give the people who watch the film their own opinion, what will happen next?
I mean, that's still happening, you know. I mean, we're talking about this story, this very particular story, and the caravan is still going. That's the basic idea. But do you remember, it's very weird that it's the last sentence that they say to each other in the last interview. What do they talk about? Do you remember?
About going back to Nigeria.
Okay, and what did the CD say to Akasum? Because it's weird, because never comes out in Q&A, and
that he don't want to go back and that he wants to stay in Italy.
In Italy. And the boy says, well, because there is school also, but when we are grown up, can we go back, says the small one. And what does the bigger one say?
When we have money, we can go back.
You need money even to go back to your fucking village. You know what I mean? Even to go back to the desperate situation where you've been trying to escape for all your life, now you need money. So the end of it is that he discovers that he found himself in a place where you need money even to go back to starve in your village. And on the other side, well, the caravan goes, you know. It's a very open ending, like, you know, in narratives. The structure of the script is a three-act classic structure with a setup, a conflict, and a resolution. But the resolution is a partial resolution, because I don't have a solution of this kind of story. I want people to think about it.
I wanted to ask, what did the film cause in Italy? Did it change anything?
Yeah, many things. Yeah, especially in the family. They get more respect from the community, or the Italian community they're living in, because people look at them and say, these are the Tuareg, you remember? They saw them on TV. You know, if it's on TV, it's real. You know, everybody wants to be in TV. If they are good enough to be in TV, well, you know, they must be important.
Yeah.
So that was one of the many things that I think changed. Then I've seen several other documentaries about, you know, migration, which didn't exist before.
Now I have a question about the Dogs Festival. How do you feel about winning this award here at the Dogs Festival?
I'm very glad. I'm really, not joking. I'm extremely happy. In fact, I was not complaining, but I was kind of not enthusiastic of the fact that we didn't have what we're having now. I mean, the possibility of us changing opinion with the younger audience, because I love the idea that the people watching the film were very young, like you are. Mm-hmm. Not because I don't care about the elder people, but because I think that you're going to face this problem yourself, and you probably need a little bit more of information and ideas of what happened and what could be possibly happen in the future, because somebody has to solve this mess, and we are not the generation who did it, so hopefully the next one will, or I don't know. I mean, the Duisburg Filmwoche, it's an important manifestation of documentary, so it would have been a pleasure to be here, even if it was not the kid and young people dedicated session. But I'm especially glad that it's the kid dedicated session, also because I'm a teacher.
But that was all. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's a format.
Thank you.
Thank you.